For this month's IFR Refresher Podcast, editor Meredith Saney spoke with Major Nicole Malachowski of the U.S. Air Force about the qualities that a good IFR safety pilot should possess. Meredith caught up with her at the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., where Major Malachowski recently gave a presentation on her career and what it was like to fly with the U.S. Thunderbirds demonstration team. Major Malachowski's fascination with airplanes began when she was a little girl. She graduated from the Air Force Academy in 1996, and for the next 10 years served as an F-15E Strike Eagle instructor pilot and flight commander, including a tour in Iraq. In 2006, she became the first female Thunderbird pilot flying the F-16 Fighting Falcon. This spring, she and her husband are relocating from Las Vegas to Washington, where she will serve as an Air Force Legislative Fellow for a one-year special duty assignment. She says she hopes she can return to flying one day.
So, the article that we have in the magazine is focusing on how do you pick someone who's going to be a good, trustworthy safety pilot for you when you're practicing instrument approaches. And I was very interested in some comments that you made at your presentation last night about developing a trust and a confidence in someone with whom you fly in precision flying for the Thunderbirds. Could you review with our audience here for a moment and tell us what are some of the qualities that really make for a good person that you can trust in your capacity as a Thunderbird, and how do you relate that to instrument flying?
Okay. Well, you know, on the Thunderbirds, when you think about the fact that we've got six jets 3 feet apart from each other going 500 miles an hour, 300 feet off the ground, obviously the margin for error there is extremely small and the level of trust is extremely, extremely high. And when I think about the common characteristics of all of the pilots out there across the board, is I think there's really a humility there. I think there's a lot to be said for all of them coming in with a level of credibility. There was a level of experience there because you need a minimum of 1,000 hours, you know, to even apply for the team as a fighter pilot. And so I think first starting with someone that has experiences and has credibility. But once you've got that foundation there, for me, it's the humility to admit that you have made mistakes in the past or that you just made a mistake. People who are willing to openly share with you the stories of maybe failures or those times that they're like, wow, I really kind of escaped safely out of that one and I'll never do that again. There are those people that will keep those stories to themselves, and those aren't the people you want to be around. If everyone says that they have, you know, they've had a perfect flying career, they've never been scared, they've never gotten vertigo, then I don't really think that they're telling you the truth. And you want those people who have the humility to share with you their stories and how they learn from them. And that's how you really build that trust, because you know they're not hiding anything from you and they're showing themselves as a human being. And you know, we weren't born with wings. All right? That's out there using science and using the technology that's been given to us, but at the end of the day we're not perfect. So their stories can teach you how to manage risk, and that's what we do when we fly. We're always managing a certain level of risk. So I think humility leads to a lot of trust for us.
So it sounds like if we were to apply it to the scenario of two pilots going out to fly approaches together, certainly it helps to have a conversation beforehand, as you suggest, to find out what that person's background is, what some of their perhaps fears or weaknesses are, so that the two pilots can develop a plan that's going to be safe and acceptable to both people, correct?
Absolutely, and that's the importance of the brief. Anytime an Air Force pilot goes and flies, they're going to spend a minimum of 1 or 2 hours mission planning and a minimum of an hour briefing together, you know, not just as pilot to crewmate, but as a team. And the important part about, you know, that briefing for me is thinking through the contingencies. What happens if something goes wrong while we're all six upside down in a loop? What happens on this diamond takeoff where there's four of us crammed on a runway and you lose your engine? And it's sitting there and chair flying those contingencies together and going, here are my actions and responsibilities. What are your actions and responsibilities? They're really at those critical times. Can't be any gray areas. I think someone, an instructor or a safety pilot you're talking about that can clearly delineate those duties in a contingency situation is also someone to be trusted, because that means that they've thought through everything. Flying is about planning for contingencies, if you ask me.
And one obvious contingency in this scenario would be, let's say the person who is under the hood or under the foggles is flying an approach. The person who is the safety pilot sees some traffic and needs to take an evasive maneuver. It would be nice for the pilot, who's the safety pilot, presumably pilot in command, to know that that person who they're trusting in the right seat is actually capable of avoiding the traffic without getting themselves into some unusual attitude. For example, if you don't have experience flying a certain type of plane, maybe you all should go out and fly in VFR conditions and make sure that you each can handle the plane appropriately before jumping into a safety pilot situation. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you need to have the a steady foundation and a framework just in the basic aircraft and the systems itself before you can go and try to do anything that's more advanced, such as instrument flying. I mean, I didn't just jump into an F-16 and try to go do loops and rolls with 6 under aircraft. I mean, this was a 3-month-long program so that I could transition and learn to fly the F-16 itself safely, take off, land, fly instrument approaches, fly cross-country, even though I had 8 years of experience flying the F-15E. The Air Force still reserved that 3 months of time for me to do nothing but learn the F-16 inside and out. And once I had that foundation, I was able to show up at the Thunderbirds and start to do this precise formation flying without having to worry about what's it like, what switch am I reaching for, what does that one do, what happens if I have all of these, you know, different emergency procedures that can happen. That cannot be something that when you're formation flying or you're doing something as intense as flying an instrument approach in bad weather, flying the airplane or understanding the plane shouldn't be where the majority of your focus is. That kind of stuff needs to be second nature so that you can put the vast majority of your attention to the task at hand, which is keeping aircraft in the sky and not, you know, into the ground, or not, in my case, putting a couple of aircraft together. Mm-hmm. So that understanding and fundamental knowledge of your aircraft has got to be there inside and out without question before you can advance in any other step.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about how you've developed your visual scanning techniques. And I was interested in something you said last night about how as you're doing these rolls and you're going inverted, you're focusing on a particular portion of your partner aircraft's plane and your relationship to it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
As you're moving around in the maneuvers. And you can't start looking at the ground or something else because you'll get sort of out of whack. How have you developed, trained your eye and your mind to really have that level of focus? Because I think this is something that regular pilots, those of us out there in GA, could really benefit from maybe some of those exercises that you might do in order to train your eye and your mind to be that sharp. Do you have any advice?
Well, I think when we're talking about doing something as like intense and intricate as flying an instrument approach, or whether it's flying, you know, in an air show, it's really a matter of prioritization. And you need to say, okay, what is my closest, hottest threat? You know, as an Air Force fighter pilot would say, what's my closest, hottest threat? If when I am flying in formation and I'm concentrating on those formation references, I have to fall back on that trust and teamwork. And I know that that lead aircraft is not taking me anywhere into a bad place. Just like hopefully these student pilots can learn that their safety officer or a pilot is not going to let them go into a bad place. Mm-hmm. So there's a foundation there that allows you to concentrate, you know, on those points. But for me and for us as a team, we chair fly a lot. And I really mean that means closing your eyes and not just thinking through the maneuver or thinking through that approach plate, but where is my hand? What is the RPM setting going to say? You know, obviously when I'm flying Thunderbirds, I'm not looking at that, but I fly a lot of instrument approaches too. And what's the RPM setting? What should it be? And if I ever find myself concentrating on just one thing for more than probably 2 or 3 seconds, that is way too long. So simulator flying or practicing with a safety pilot as often as you can is absolutely imperative to keeping that instrument cross-check up. Just like you would look through all of your performance instruments on this ILS, I am doing the same thing as I'm flying as a Thunderbird, referencing everything, but you can't allow yourself to get distracted. I can look at the ground rush during an air show and get disoriented, literally, because we're so intense on that other aircraft. I mean, it's easy to get just stuck on just your airspeed or just your altitude and be off course and be in a place that isn't a protected zone.
Mm-hmm.
So prioritizing what is my closest, hottest threat, and then chair flying and being aware of your tendencies. And that means, what are my weaknesses? You know, do I let my airspeed fluctuate too much? As a Thunderbird, do I often fly a little bit too far forward? So it has to do with self-awareness and self-accountability, which hopefully you're getting that feedback from your instructor or your safety pilot,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what you want. You want that person to say, here are your weaknesses, so that when you chair fly and you're thinking about that cross-check, you're aware of your weak parts, and so if something starts to happen, you can recover from that.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point that you make. You know, rather than just picking the nearest warm body who's qualified, who can go fly with you, makes sense to shop around a little bit and find someone who has some knowledge and experience who, like you say, would be able to provide you with some good feedback that would actually make the simulated IMC experience a little more beneficial rather than just going through the motions and knocking out your six and six and being done with it.
Well, sure, anybody can, you know, go through the motions and check the squares, like you said, but you don't want to be just, who wants to be just the average IMC pilot or just the average fighter pilot? I mean, I would hope that those of us who have the personalities that want to go out there and experience the freedom of aviation and the courage and the confidence, you know, that it gives all of us, we want to be better than that. And that means always striving, you know, for that next level, not just accepting, you know, the minimum. Sure, I can take off and land an F-16, but I want to be able to employ the F-16 also. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, you know, with your instrument flying. And this brings me to an interesting idea that just popped in my head. It's just the concept of complacency. And, you know, you figure you've flown a couple, you know, instrument approaches under the hood with the same ILS, so I've got this one pegged, so you stop scanning maybe the approach plate, your cross-check slows down, and next thing you know, you're setting yourself up for, you know, a risky situation or even disaster. And so remembering that a lot of fabulous pilots with much experience before us have made the ultimate sacrifice, you know, with pilot error, and that we are all susceptible. And if you don't look at your safety pilot and feel that he or she feels the same way, then I wouldn't be hanging out with that person either. This is about managing risk. And it's about recognizing that anyone at any experience level can grow complacent at any time. Mm-hmm. And to actively think about that and in your pre-brief before you fly, bring that up to each other and be honest with how you're feeling that day. You know, some of us, you know, you're more tired or you've got something else on your mind. Let that person know. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in this together. You're in that same plane. And so at the end of the day, your safety depends on each other's, you know, abilities.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, how about some tips from when you were flying in active duty, not in the Thunderbirds? On a VMC day, you're out there scanning for bad guys in the sky or scanning for friendly targets, whatever it is that you do up there. Can you give us some tips on how to better look for traffic?
Well, you know, we always talk about the scanning technique. I'm very lucky because I flew in an F-15E strike eagle, which has two people. So I'll always say that two sets of eyes are always better, obviously, than one set of eyes. Now, for me, in a fighter aircraft, there's a lot of different ways to look for things. Of course, with the Mark 1 eyeball, that works very well. But also, we've got the radar, and we've also got some airborne command and control that can talk to us on the radio and point us in the right direction. But assuming they're not there, I think your visual scan has to be methodical. It can't be haphazard. I've heard of a lot of techniques, people who talk about going from left to right, up to down, or starting in front of them, scanning just the right quadrant, if you will, from the 12 to the 3 o'clock, coming back to 12, cross-checking your instruments, and then scanning from the 12 left to the 9 o'clock, you know, position. There's also people that say go left to right all the way from 9 to 3. I don't think in that respect it matters. I think there's probably, you can argue benefits and detractors from all the different techniques. The key is that you pick one and that you stick to it methodically and that you don't let your eyeballs just bounce around looking for things. Now, obviously, if you catch any kind of line of sight or motion in your periphery, well, that's where you fall back on your ability to prioritize. That's now my closest, hottest threat. So let me look over there, make sure it's not something I need to react to, and then bam, start right back up with that methodical scan. And this is an important point. You guys probably, as a crew, you know, between a student pilot and a safety pilot, need to coordinate that. You know, why not have one person who's responsible for maybe just one, you know, one of those halves? Or say, hey, you know, I'm going to scan everything in front of the wings. I'd like you to keep a lookout, you know, at our wings and aft and work it that way. So crew coordination is an important thing. You can cover more area more efficiently if you do that. And you just need to be on the same page, because it would really be a tragedy if we had two people in there looking the same direction and they missed, you know, that traffic threat that was coming from one side. Mm-hmm. So pick a technique, and there are a lot out there, and just promise yourself to be methodical and make sure that your crewmate knows what it is and try to delineate those duties.
Good advice. Well, now that you're going to be joining us here in the Washington, D.C. area, are you going to get to do any flying?
Well, I'm going to be flying a really awesome desk, I bet. It's, hopefully it has 5 or 6 drawers. I am really looking forward to the new challenge and adventure here. It is a non-flying assignment. I don't know what my schedule is going to be like, but I would like to get back in. I have not flown a Cessna or general aviation since high school. I'm a big fan of gliders. I've really been hankering to get back in a glider. I did a lot of that while I was a kid at the Air Force Academy, so I'm definitely going to look into that. I've been flying every week since I was 12 years old, so the prospect of not flying for the next 3 years is just not going to happen. So I'll fix that. I just don't know how yet.
Well, if you want to shoot some approaches, give me a call.
Okay, that's excellent.
Major Nicole Malachowski. Our cover story in the May issue of IFR Refresher, Reading the Wind. Most pilots get by with a basic understanding of wind, but knowing the details can save you time, money, and perhaps one day, your life. To subscribe to IFR Refresher or for more information, just log on www.ifr-refresher.com.